In just a moment, you'll be listening to a message that was given by Pastor Kyle Olsfelt of Grace Baptist Church in Pampa, Texas. We encourage you to give attention to the message and to follow along in your Bible.
I know that you know this story. Most of you know this story as well as I do. So I know that we'll not discuss or address anything new, but hopefully we can be helped by it tonight. Before we get to the text, I just want us to think about something that is true of every person, really to an extent, that walks on this earth. I want us to think about this truth that every one of us have preferences in different areas of life. Every one of us have different preferences in different areas of life, and based on our preferences, we make decisions to fit those preferences. To illustrate it, just let me throw out a couple of random thoughts. There is nothing intended by these statements, just some ways in which to illustrate this. Someone may say something like this: I just love living in a small town, a small community like Pampa. They may say something like this: you couldn't make me live in a big city. You couldn't make me deal with all the people and all the traffic. I just love being in a small town. That is a preference, is it not? All right, and so based on that preference, that is what the person does to make sure that they get to stay in that kind of an environment. Somebody may say something like this: you know, I'm happy with this simple little home that we live in. We don't need anything bigger. We don't need anything fancier. We don't need anything nicer. We just don't need it. We're happy living in this home that we're in. And again, how they conduct themselves, it lends itself for them to be happy with their preferences overall. So the illustrations could continue, but you get the point, you get the idea. And a lot of people, that's how they live their entire lives, living according to their preferences, their wants. But how many of us have ever talked to someone who compromised what it is they said they wanted in life? And while it may have seemed fun at the beginning, it wears off and it fades and it's not near as much fun as they thought it was going to be. See, somebody may say something like this: man, I just enjoy living in a small town. I just enjoy living in the small community. And then an opportunity presents itself and they compromise what they say they want, and they end up moving to the big city. And while it was okay for a while, you hear them say things like this: man, what I'd love or what I'd give to be back in a small community like I once was. Or, we were presented this offer on this house, it was just too good to pass up, so we went ahead and we upgraded a little bit, and now we got more house than what we want. More house than what we need, too much upkeep, too much maintenance, etc. Now, I'm trying to go somewhere with this. I hope we see the point in this, and that is this, is whenever a person compromises what it is they say they want out of life, it does not usually lead to their joy and satisfaction. They need to stick to what it is they want if they want to have joy and satisfaction. Now, keeping that in mind, in Daniel, here is what we know if we know anything about the context of this story. We know that God allowed the people of Judah, or the children of Israel, to be conquered by Nebuchadnezzar and the people of the Babylonian Empire. As a result of being conquered, as a result of being taken by way of captivity to the Babylonians, we know that there were young people who were taken from Judah to the Babylonian palace, or to the Babylonian capital, and they were going to serve in the government of the Babylonians. And the most notable, the most famous of these young people is Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Their story really is fascinating. But in chapter 3, here's what we read in verse number 1, is that Nebuchadnezzar comes up with this bright idea, something that he wants to do, something that he wants to accomplish. It involves an image. So let's read verse number 1. It says, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura, in the province of Babylon. So Nebuchadnezzar, he gets this idea to set up this image. And what we see in verse number 5 is this, is that Nebuchadnezzar wants everyone at the appointed time to bow down to this image. It says that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king hath set up. So the instructions are very simple, are they not? Here is this image. It's been placed over here in this particular area. And when you hear the music, here's what you are commanded to do. You are commanded to bow down and worship this image. Now, think about this. This is not just going to involve a handful of individuals. This is involving the entire nation of Babylon. What was their population? We have no idea. We don't know how many family units there were. We don't know how many individuals there were in the land. We don't know how many people made up the Babylonian Empire at that time. All we know is this, is all of them were commanded to bow down and worship this image when the signal was given. Now think about the Babylonian Empire, and let's use some common sense for just a moment. If you have several hundred thousand or up to 1 million people by way of population, do you think everyone genuinely loved and adored Nebuchadnezzar? Of course not. How do we know? We know that because in a town of 18,000, not everyone genuinely adores and appreciates the leadership that we have in our community. Well, what I'm trying to show us is this, is there is absolutely no way that there was a 100% consensus with what Nebuchadnezzar was doing. So no doubt when this image began to be built and when this image began to be set up, you have to know that there were some, at least a handful of people mumbling and grumbling under their breath that this was one of the dumbest things that a king could have his people do. This is stupid. How much of our taxpayers' money has gone into building this golden image? Why is it that I'm being forced to bow down to this image when they start playing the music? This is dumb. This is ridiculous. It makes no sense at all. Can you hear some of the people in the land of Babylon griping about this? If you can't hear that, you've never dealt with people. I promise you there were people who were griping and complaining, and yet here's what we know is that Nebuchadnezzar gave them incentive to comply with the command. Because we know what's said in verse number 6, it says, "And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Apparently, this fiery furnace was not some new form of execution, some new form of punishment. Apparently, this had been around in their culture for some time. And so here is what people heard. If you don't bow down to this image, you are going to be cast into the burning fiery furnace. So that makes people start viewing this whole process a little bit different. I think this is dumb. I think this is ridiculous. I think this is the craziest thing our king has presented to us in a long time. I can't believe that he would try to force this upon us. However, He does have the power to throw people into this burning fiery furnace, so I'm going to begin rethinking at least my actions, maybe not my attitude, but at least my actions toward the decree that's been given. So in verse number 7, again, we're familiar with this. It says, therefore, at that time, when all the people heard the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, and all kinds of music, notice what it says. It says, all the people, the nations and the languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar, the king, had set up. So generally speaking, what does verse 7 tell us? It tells us this, everyone bowed down to the image. We have no idea what was going on in the minds of the people. We have no idea what was being thought in the hearts of the people. We have no idea what was going on internally, but we know this, that they were willing to bend the knee physically to this image so as to worship it, except for three individuals, obviously Daniel not being among the three. See, in verse number 8 it says, wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans came near and accused the Jews. They spake and said to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. Thou, O king, hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the instruments shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. So they remind the king of the orders that he's given, as if the king needed the reminder. And then they said this, there are certain Jews whom thou hast set over all or over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not regarded thee. They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were ratted out. See, there was someone present who, when the instruments began to play, when everyone began to kneel, when everyone began to bow, they noticed Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego not taking the knee. Now again, you got to remember that people are people. Can you imagine what that must have looked like and felt like for everyone kneeling in that moment? Can you imagine that there were at least a couple of people mumbling to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, hey guys, you need to kneel down. Guys, you better bow. You know what the decree is. You know what's going to happen. You better bow. Can you imagine someone saying something like this? Hey, you don't have to mean it in your heart. You just got to go along with it. Listen, you can be defying the king in your heart. You don't have to go along with it in your heart. Just hurry up and kneel so that you don't get in trouble. And what were Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego doing wherever they were that day? They were standing tall and they were not going to kneel. They were not going to kneel. So when someone sees this, it makes them mad. It makes them angry. So much so that they go to the king, remind him of the decree. And in verse number 13, we read this. It says, then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up? And then he reminds them of what the consequence is going to be, that if they do not bow down, they're going to be cast the same hour, it says in verse 15, into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. So in verse number 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. What does that statement mean? It just means this. Listen, our response to you is not flippant. This is not something that we've just kind of come up with and we haven't really thought this thing through. No, we're not careful to answer thee in this matter. In verse number 17, it says, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. Now, again, I know that we're familiar with this, but let's try to read this like it's the first time, okay? The young men say to Nebuchadnezzar, "We know that our God is able to deliver us." We know this. But in verse number 18, they say the words that every child of God should have great respect for. They said, "But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy God, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." The young men say to Nebuchadnezzar, "We know what the decree is. We're not ignorant to that. We know what the command is, and we know what the consequence is if we don't do it. Now, king, you got to know where we're coming from. We believe that our God is able to deliver us. We believe that God is able to somehow deliver us from this situation. But, king, you need to know this as well, that if our God chooses not to deliver us, we're not bowing to your God and we're not worshiping your image. Essentially, here is what these three young men said. We would rather die in the fire than to compromise what we know to be right. We would rather die in the fire than to compromise on what we know to be right. I want us to understand this. This was not just a preference that was leading these young men. This was not just something that they, you know, kind of felt strongly about. This was a conviction of theirs. And here's what they said is, we're going to be guided by our conviction. We're not going to compromise for the sake of convenience, because we know where that leads, and it would only lead to a destination of regret and remorse. If we compromise on what we know to be right, if we compromise on what we know to be the way we're supposed to go, we could never live with ourselves. We'd rather die than to compromise what we know is right. Now tonight, I want us to think about this principle, because this principle is so important. Every one of us have authority figures in our lives. Every one of us have people with authority. Every one of us have people with some measure of control or some measure of influence in our lives. And here's what they want to do. They want to tell us what to do. And I don't know if you've ever noticed this or not, but a lot of the people who are in positions of authority don't really care about the things of God and what we would call our preferences or what we might call our convictions. You ever notice this? We live in a world where there are a lot of people who have positions of authority, positions of power, positions of control and influence, and they're not real worried about the preferences or the ideas or the beliefs or the convictions of the child of God. And because of their position of authority and because they have gotten used to the ability to tell people what to do, they try to tell you and I what to do and how to live. And a lot of times what they want us to do is to go against our preferences, to go against our belief system, to go against our sense of conviction. And then here is what they really like to try to do. They try to impose some kind of penalty on us, some kind of consequence, if we don't yield to their authority, their power, or influence. So what do you mean? How many employees have ever heard a statement like this? If you don't do this, you'll not be able to work here. Fairly simple, big boy. If you want to work here, this is what you've got to do. Well, I need to do this because I'm a Christian. I need to do this because of my schedule. I need to do this because of my church life. And the employer says something like this: hey, listen, I get it. I understand it. But you got to know that if you're going to work here, you got to play by these rules. That's just how it is. And if you're not willing, you'll just need to find another job. See, what are they doing? They're exercising their authority. They're exercising their power. And they're saying, if you do not comply, then the consequence will be you will lose your job. They know how the system works. It's not just the employer, though. Think about it like this. We've got family members, some of us, who like to exercise their authority or their control or their influence, and they want you to bend to their will. And if you don't bend to their will, they are more than happy to try to place some kind of a consequence in your life. Think about this. Have you ever witnessed something like this? Hey, listen, Dad and Mom, if you don't do this, we're not going to let the grandkids come see you. Hey, listen, Dad and Mom, if you don't do this, then we're going to stop coming by the house. And they begin to try to punish the dad and mom for not doing what they demand of them. Well, hey, kids, if you don't do this, then me and Dad or me and Mom, we may not include you in the family vacation or the family outing, or we may not remember you at a certain time when assets are being divided up. What are they doing? They're exercising their authority. They're exercising their power in an effort to try to control behavior. People say things like this: well, if this is how you're going to be, then we can't continue to be friends. Hey, listen, if this is the way you're going to be, if you're not going to bend, if you're not going to compromise, if you're not going to ease up a little bit on who you are, then we simply cannot be friends. I'm not making this stuff up, am I? The boss likes to exercise their control. The family member who's a brat likes to exercise their control. The friend who is selfish and consumed with themselves, they want to exercise control. And on and on and on it goes. And if you don't comply and bend to my wishes, I will see that you are punished. And you know where we're at in America today? We've got a whole lot of people like the nation of Babylon who gripe, grumble, and complain while bending the knee to the demands of whomever it may be in their life. You know this as well as I do, and this is where I want us to focus in for just a moment. We don't have near enough Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's in our culture today. We don't have near enough children of God with the backbone to say this: I would rather die in the fire than to compromise and bend my knee to your demands. We don't have near enough people saying, I don't care what the consequences are, I'm going to do what is right. I don't care what the consequences are, I'm going to do what I know I'm supposed to be doing. I don't care what the consequences are, I'm going to let the Word of God lead me, the Word of God guide me, and if it angers everyone in my family, if it angers every one of my friends, if it angers anyone at work, I don't care. We don't have that kind of spirit these days. And it's because we don't have that kind of spirit that we as a nation are in the position we're in. We gripe, we complain, we mumble, we grumble. But we don't have the backbone to just take the stand for what we know is right. I'm trying to remind us tonight that there should be some things in our lives that are preferences, that are convictions, that are things we know are what we're supposed to do in this life. And it doesn't matter who tries to sway us. It doesn't matter who tries to convince us. And it doesn't matter what the consequences are. We just need to determine we're doing right. And we're going to stop trying to play both sides of the aisle. I'm not going to try to appease them while doing the right thing. No, I'm just going to do the right thing no matter what. I suspect, can't prove this, but I suspect that this has been true of many, many people. They have compromised what they knew what was right, thinking that that would lead to some kind of satisfaction long term. And it never does. If you and I have ever been the one who has compromised, here's what we know. It leads to some shame. It leads to some regret. It leads to some heartache. Just trying to remind us tonight, we need to be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We need to be the one who says, King, listen, we're not trying to be disrespectful. We're not trying to be rude in how we handle this. We know what your decree is, but we're not bowing. Do we have that kind of spirit? We'd all like to think that we do, but isn't it amazing how many times when we're put in that position, isn't it amazing the number of times we're tempted to fold? Because someone out there is putting some pressure on us. Have the determination to say, I would rather die than to compromise what I know is right.
If you've appreciated this message from Kyle Olsfelt of Grace Baptist Church, let us know by contacting us on our website at gbcpampa.com or on our Facebook page, Grace Baptist Church, Pampa, Texas.